Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice. Ask your questions. Join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. We have a very special show for you, and I'm going to set the scene as follows. Wouldn't it be chilling to learn that a mind virus was rapidly spreading through the world, infecting our own society and manifesting in people close to us? What if you discovered that humanity is being driven to the brink of extinction by an illness, that all poverty, our climate devastation, and the perpetual wars, consumption, and health crisis we see all around us have roots in a mass psychological infection? What if you learned that this infection is not just highly communicable, but is also self-replicating? And better yet, what if you discovered that there is a cure to this mind virus that is plaguing our humanity? A path to finding ease within dis-ease, a way to tap into our collective creative genius and collectively heal. And with me today to talk about his brand new book, Witiko, Healing the Mind Virus That Plagues the World, is the author and founder of the Awaken in the Dream community, Mr. Paul Levy. Welcome, Paul, to Voice Rising.
Yeah, hi. I'm just so happy to be here, really. Thank you.
And I'm so happy to have you. And I've been carrying your new book around me for the last couple of weeks. I was lucky to get it in a hardcover. And it is simply brilliant, Paul. I have to say congratulations, how you really pull in from so many different traditions, so many thought systems. And for me, what your book did was it really went to the root of what you call Witiko, which you're going to get to in a minute. You uprooted it, and literally, I feel like you pulled it out of my system, which is a blessing. So that being said, more and more people are hearing about the phrase Witiko, a Native American idea, which you describe as meaning evil or a collective madness. Can you share a little bit with us before we go further what Witiko is? And
yeah, for sure. Totally. No, so it's, keep in mind that every spiritual tradition throughout history has been pointing at Witiko, but just in their own language, in their own symbolic way. And so it's not like I've discovered something. I'm just a translator. But this mind virus, this Witiko mind virus, it is at the root and it is at the source of the collective madness we are playing out and of the evil that's getting enacted in our world. And so there's nothing, and I'm not exaggerating, there's nothing more important to come to terms with than what Witiko is showing us, because it's teaching us something. If we don't recognize what it's actually offering us about ourselves, then we're doomed to continue to destroy ourselves. But encoded in the pathogen, in this mind virus, is its own vaccine, is its own healing. But that depends if we actually have the realization of what it's revealing to us. And so it's a psycho-spiritual disease of the soul that operates through our blind spots and through our unconscious and through the projective tendencies of the mind in such a way that we wind up hypnotizing ourselves. and there's no one else doing that, we ultimately are colluding with putting ourselves under a spell. And by doing that, our incredible creative spirit gets imprisoned. And then we subjectively feel, oh, I'm not creative, I'm blocked, I'm stuck. Because the thing about Watiko, it has no creativity at all, but it's a master impersonator. In the apocryphal texts, it's called, for example, the counterfeiting spirit. So it impersonates us. It offers us a fictitious version of who we are. And if we identify with its version of ourselves, this limited, wounded version, then it has us. Because it can't, it has no power over us when we're connected with our true nature. But it offers us a simulation. If we then identify with its fictitious version, then it has us. Because then it can manipulate us and control us. And that's what's getting played out writ large on the world stage. And so just in essence, think about what I'm just describing. We actually, you see, the thing about Watiko, it can't steal our soul. It tricks us into giving our soul away. Then we identify with who we're not. Then we disconnect from our creative power. That's Watiko in a nutshell.
And you do that so brilliantly. I mean, really, it was 350 pages, your book, I believe. And you just did that in so brilliantly. You've dedicated your new book to all of us human beings who have chosen to incarnate at this particularly challenging time in history, and your wishes to let us all be of service and to elevate our species. And I guess you're bringing us to that, to unlock our creative genius, because being human at this time is not an easy gig. As you say, how would you assess the moment, 2021, we're at the end, we're going into 2022, and it seems like we have fires burning on every single, you know, corner as far as climate crisis, pandemic, mental health, suicide rate is going up, hunger. There's not one little aspect that seems that is not being touched. And yet this is what really moved me. And I guess I'm jumping over my notes here, but you say it's as if we've gotten accustomed to so much, you know, the war on terror, the war on pests, the war on the virus. We've gotten so numbed that we can sense that it's all off, and we know that it's all off, and yet we're not acting. We're paralyzed. Or what's the clue, or how can we get out of this mess?
Yeah, for sure. Well, what you just described, that's an expression of Watiko, where we become paralyzed or overwhelmed, and then we disconnect from our creative agency. Mm-hmm. You know, because the thing about Watiko, it's this dreaming phenomena in that we are dreaming it up collectively together, that there's no such objective, independently existing, intrinsic mind virus called Watiko. So there's nothing to be afraid of, but we are actually, because we're not connected with our true creative power, we then are dreaming up the Watiko epidemic, because it's a collective psychosis, as a way of revealing to us what we're unconscious of. So one way that I'm continually trying to point out Watiko so that people can see it, because it only has power over us to the extent we don't see it. And it doesn't want to be seen, because when you see it, you take away its power and you empower yourself. And so I'm continually trying to point out, here's how, because it operates not only through configuring the non-local field, you know, and that includes actual external events, but our mind's reactions to its manifestation. You know, it's a whole quantum system where there's no separation. And so when you begin to see it, then all of a sudden it unlocks this incredible creative spirit in oneself. So this time in history, this moment we're in, it's a perilous time, and it's an incredible time, because to see this as a dream, our unconscious is being revealed to us. It's in our face through what's happening in the world, through the Watiko psychic epidemic. Now, just keep in mind, Watiko, it's so amazing because it's an inner disease of the soul that actually is able to configure events in the outer world, which is how it expresses itself. It actually is reflecting via events in the outer world the the you know, when a psyche is under its thrall, that's a description of a dream, when the outer circumstance is reflecting the inner. So mm-hmm. to begin to see that, that's to begin to get the gift of Autico, and then it unlocks your creative spirit. So what I'm trying to point out is that something is being revealed to us. Autico is a revelation. It's an incredible opportunity to help us to wake up to who we are, just individually and collectively, that we don't exist separate from each other, but we're interdependent. But if we don't recognize what Autico is revealing to us, then it's just programmed to destroy us. And the choices are ours. It depends how we going to actually create it and dream it.
Yeah, you talk also about this, the key, exactly what you're saying, is if we have to see it, we have to, in a way, see also our collective shadow, and we have to see our own personal shadows. And we all know that there's a tendency for us, with all our positive affirmations and with all our positive thoughts, to smooth over the pain that is... The pain that we had. I mean, I'm sitting here in Germany. There was an Adolf Hitler that killed millions of people. The pain that there is hunger in Yemen, right? And mm-hmm. so how do we start that shadow work without re-triggering trauma or without falling even into more depression, which is gripping our world? How do we make friends that where there is great light, there is great shadow, or where there is, you know, the stars only shine in the darkest night? Like, how do we make friends with digging deeper, realizing that we're digging for gold in ourselves and collectively, that only when we see it can we start to heal it?
And I so appreciate that question, because that's what we're here to do, you know. In mm-hmm. other words, we are, any one of us, if we're able to reflect upon, and like you're saying, not just the collective, not just the personal shadow, but the collective shadow, the archetypal shadow, and that's mm-hmm. the dark side of God, and that has to do with coming to terms with evil. And, you know, so many spiritual traditions are pointing at that encoded in the evil is this incredible light, that the real light only emerges out of a confrontation with the darkness. Now, keep in mind that Autico, it's this psychic blindness. So when we turn away and become like an ostrich and put our heads in the sand, not only does that feed Autico, that is Autico in action. So what that means is we have to develop the courage to really do our inner work, you know, on our own stuff, our own unconscious, our own shadow, and also to see how we're complicit in the creation. We are participating mm-hmm. in the creation of Autico. If somebody just feels, no, I'm just innocent, I have good intention, I'm not colluding at all, well, that point of view is showing that they're under the spell of Autico. Because the thing about Autico, you know, it's actually, it can show us the illusion of the separate self. It can help us to see through that illusion and to recognize that we're interdependent on each other. But as long as we see somebody acting out Autico, and we polarize and demonize them and have a polarized point of view going, oh, they're possessed by Autico and I'm not, that polarized point of view is an expression that you're under Autico. You're under the spell of it. Because the point is, if somebody's playing out Autico, this is a dream. They're a dream character. They're reflecting back that potentiality in you. And when you see that, it cuts through the imagination of the separate self, and you begin to actually remember who you are.
Yeah. So what are some of the tools that we have? Because it seems that if we see evil and then we go and fight evil, we're creating another war out there. And at the same time, if we don't speak up or we don't act, then we're also feeding Autico. So what are the tools that we have to not only become more conscious, but transform our world collectively?
And we already have that power. We already possess it, you know, and we've always possessed it. So here's the thing, if you turn away from evil going, no, I don't want to do anything, well, then evil just, you know, continues to unfold. But if you try to fight it, well, then you've also, you know, given power to evil, because then you're playing its game. And if you become too fascinated with it, going, oh, I really want to understand it, you know, and you become too fascinated, well, then you're investing it with a reality that it doesn't deserve. Here's the way to do that. Here's the solution. You actually can't stay unconscious of it. You have to see how Watiko works by configuring the non-local field in the external world and how it affects your own reactions, and it affects you in your unconscious when you see evil or when you get possessed by your unconscious and you act it out. So you have to see the disease, but then you realize, but you know, not to get overly fascinated by it because that feeds it, but then to realize I'm a sovereign being. I get to choose where I place my attention. And okay, now that I see Watiko, I can choose to invest my attention in creating the world I want to live in. That's kryptonite. That then Watiko can't get its hooks in us at all, and it just dissolves.
Beautiful. And that's also the quantum reality that you were talking about, the non-local fields. I mean, this is also the quantum reality, the 100th monkey theory, that if two of us are creating the world that we desire and not hooking in but still seeing and being conscious, then we are, the two is almost like four, and the four is almost like 16. It's like exponentially, it can shift very fast, that we usher in the new world of peace that we actually do desire deep down. I think most people do desire, most people know that this numbness and this violence and this intense sadness is not serving them. And so most people are longing to understand what the cure is.
Yeah, and most and everybody has the cure. We already possess it. That's what I'm trying to point out.
Yeah. Paul, we're going to take a very short break for our sponsors, and we're going to be back with more on Watiko.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm your host, Kara Johnstad, and with me in studio is the author, Paul Levy. Paul, the German romantic poet and philosopher Novalis, famously wrote, "The seat of the soul is where the inner world and the outer world meet, where they overlap. Many say it's the heart field, others say it's our mind and our thoughts." And I'm personally so fascinated with our voice, which runs through our body and into each other, and is a reflection, as you know, all these conditionings and the programs. Do you have thoughts where the seat of the soul may reside?
Yeah, and I that quote, it's either in, you know, in the book that just is coming out or my next book on Watiko, and I couldn't agree more that where the outer world and our inner world intersect, that is where the soul is to be found, and that's the dreamlike nature. You know, mm-hmm. when you're in a dream and you're not aware of the situation you're in, i.e. that you're dreaming, you think you have an idea that the world you're experiencing in that dream is objective and separate mm-hmm. from you. And as soon as you relate to the world as an object, you've created yourself as a subject who's in relation to the object. That's the separate self. And as soon as there's the separate self, there's other. And as soon as there's others, there's fear. And that's food for Watiko. So, like, one way to understand this, if you're in a dream, and try and imagine this, and if you're holding a point of view that the dream is objective, so you're not recognizing that you're dreaming, then the dream, which is nothing other than a reflection of your own mind, will completely shapeshift instantaneously and reflect back to you, giving you all the evidence confirming your viewpoint, i.e. that it is objective. And now take a look at what's happened. You have all the evidence proving to you your viewpoint, that your viewpoint is accurate, so you become even more fixed in your viewpoint of seeing the world you're inhabiting, i.e. the dream, as objective, and that becomes a self-reinforcing feedback loop in which you've hypnotized yourselves. You've used your own creative agency against you in a way where you've entranced yourselves. That's Watiko. But to see the nature of our situation, i.e. that you're dreaming, then all of a sudden that's when, to the whole metaphor of finding your soul, that's when you're connecting with your true nature, with who you actually are. And then you're also connecting with, oh my God, I'm actually creating my experience of myself mm-hmm. and of this dream moment by moment. And then all of a sudden, instead of feeling victimized and helpless and despairing, you have this incredible, enormous power. And you have compassion. You've tapped into compassion because you recognize that all the characters in the dream are just aspects of you, that they're not separate. And out of that realization arises compassion.
Compassion, something that we very, very much need in our world. I'd love to talk to you about voice and courage. There was a passage in your book where you talk about a client of yours, and he was basically saying that he was in a dream, or I remember him waking from a dream where he just felt he was struggling with being silenced. It takes a lot of courage to voice truthfully. So when we're waking up in the dream, or when we are seeing things clearly, there's a deep fear, I think, that we can be. There's not even a fear. The truth is we can be silenced. We are silenced. Messengers have been persecuted. People that have, maybe that are under the spell of Watiko, they willingly are so hypnotized that they might see the other, the messenger bringer, as something evil when actually they're trying to show goodness. What do you say to people that are, I mean, what is your own personal experience? You're writing about these really complex things, and people might say, Paul Levy is crazy. And
right,
people
right.
like me are like, wow, he just, you know, awakened something in me that was so precious. What is your take on voice and courage?
No, I can say a lot.
The importance of not going into, meditative silence is good, but we don't want to be silenced.
Yeah. No, I can say a lot about that, because the thing about Watiko, one way of really tracking when the Watiko spirit is, you know, in the house, so to speak, mm-hmm. is when all of a sudden you feel like, oh, it's not safe for me to be authentic and for me to express my true voice, that if I express what I'm really feeling, it'll people will get angry with me, it'll create polarization, they'll withdraw their love, it'll end our friendship. So here's what happens. You see, we've all, as we've incarnated in our lives, you know, we're in a world where at a certain point, as we connect with ourselves and we shine our light and we express ourselves and we speak our voice, we're going to be met with this criticism or this judgment. And when we're kids, you know, we tend to internalize that. So that oppressive voice tends to get internalized within our psyche. And then it actually gets rendered in the unconscious to the point where it becomes chronic, to the point where we don't even know that when our true voice is coming up, we instantaneously shut it down because we've taken the program that it's not okay to do that. And that process, like I've been saying, you know, is unconscious in so many of us. So one of the main ways of healing Watiko in oneself and in the world, it's what I'm pointing at when I talk about being creative, because to find one's inner voice, that's one's genius. That helps one find one's vocation, helps one find one's calling, and connects us with our inner guide and our guiding spirit. But if we turn away from finding our voice, that energy, that daimonic energy, and that in the word like one's daimon is the guiding spirit, and it's an energy that can literally take one over. If we don't have conscious relationship to that daimon, which is the source of the voice, it constellates negatively and becomes a demon. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the point is that encoded in this daimonic energy, which is the source of our voice, is our creative agency. And it all has to do with really somehow cultivating the courage to be able to speak it. But we also have to understand that we just can't speak it all over the place because it can create trouble. You have to have skillfulness. And that's what I've been trying to navigate, you know, in my life, because I've been pointing this out for over 40 years. And at first, everybody thought I was crazy, and I literally got locked up. But then I've developed a skillfulness where I'm being able to articulate what I'm pointing at that's actually helping people to see what I'm pointing at instead of just thinking I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you, there is a part also in the book where you talk about, I believe his name is Wilson, but somebody who wrote truth almost in a fantasy fiction way. And I was thinking about all the enlightened masters that have used cones and riddles and parables. Do you think it's really hard when people just speak truth to power, and that it might be safer to navigate in the form of poetry or codes?
Yeah. Yeah. Or being like the court jester, or being the fool, like, you know, speak, because, okay, as an example, say if you see somebody who's really fallen asleep and they're really afflicted with Watiko, if you're trying to preach the light to them, then I would ask, who's the one who's asleep? It's you.
Yeah.
Because their eyes can't see. It's a much better strategy to teach people the art of seeing, you know.
Yeah.
And who knows what that looks like. So the idea is, you see, and this gets back to what I'm continually emphasizing, the profound importance of being creative, you know, be it in dance or poetry or writing or God knows what. And that, you see, once we embody being creative, that activates other people's unconscious and gives them permission to be creative, and it becomes contagious, and it's like a viral phenomena, where
the
when
new contagious virus.
yeah, exactly, and it's a positive feedback loop, because here's how it works: when you connect with who you are, with your nature, you recognize your nature by its very nature is creative. And so when you see that and you connect with that, you get in touch with your own creativity. So you express yourselves creatively. And the more you do that, the more you express yourselves creatively, the more you know your nature. It becomes a positive, self-reinforcing feedback loop that's creating light. That's what I'm pointing at, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you know this anonymous quote, which is on a tombstone in Green River Cemetery, but it reads that artists and poets are the raw nerve endings of humanity. By themselves, they can do little to save humanity, and without them, there's not much worth saving. But actually, probably it's going to be transformed after everybody starts being highly creative and read your book, that that they are the raw nerve endings of our humanity, and that we're all artists, and we are the ones that are destined to save this planet by tapping into our creative genius.
Yeah, well, I wrote an article years ago, and the title of the article was, it's artists who are the healers of the world. And it's exactly that. They're the canaries in the coal mine who are tapped into the collective unconscious of our species. And they're like shamans, because a shaman is the creative artist par excellence, in that they intuit and sense what's happening in the collective unconscious. And they might not even be fully conscious of it, but they're somehow offering themselves to be a channel to creatively to symbolize and creatively express what they're tapping into, you know, through the form of their art. And then whatever their art is, that actually has this resonance with other people's unconscious, you know. And so I can't say enough about how the artist, and that's, you know, connected to the shaman, to the wounded healer, because we're all wounded healer, shamans, artists in training. Mm-hmm. But the idea of the wounded healer and the shaman is that instead of like, oh, I'm so wounded and I'm traumatized and it stops us, no, by going through, and I'm really kind of, I'm talking out of my own experience, because my process started over 40 years ago where I almost got killed by an overwhelming trauma and wound. You know, and I'm not going to go into the story, but there is a way that I've been able to go through it, to see the wound as the portal, which, like a shaman who descends into the underworld, it connected me with my creative gifts. Yeah. And I still, I'm carrying that wound. It's, you know, I feel it 24/7, but instead of identifying with it or thinking it's a problem, you know, it's like, no, I'm carrying it in a way where it becomes, you know, the doorway to whatever gifts that I'm able to offer.
Well, that I think is the key that so many artists have, that we are not, that we use it as that's the place where the light gets in, or that's the place, that's the shit that's fertilizing the garden. You know, it's like that is, you know, instead of saying, whatever, that I'm a victim and I had this horrific experience happening. Yes, we had the experience and it happened, and what can we do with it exactly?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you can share, and I was going to say, let's talk about the power of word in it all.
Yeah, well, the power of the word, I mean, think about, you know, in the Bible, in John 1, whatever, you know, first was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And our language is incredibly potent because, first off, think about how you make a word. You spell it. So the way we use language, we're actually casting spells, either positive or negative. And I'll give you an example. If somebody says, oh, I hear about spiritual awakening, oh, it's really hard to spiritually awaken. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, by the power of saying that, out of all the parallel quantum potential universes, they're going to invoke a universe that's going to confirm their point of view that awakening is really hard. And that's the power of the word, the power of their language. So we have to be really careful how we speak and how we think, because it's not just we're describing something in language, we're literally evoking it. It's a creative medium.
Yeah. And the first part is how we speak, to be mindful how we speak and what we're speaking into creation. And the second thing is what we're ingesting and absorbing. There are so many people that are allowing their televisions to run 24/7. Without realizing that they have to shift and move all of these stories through their system, right? I think the one is for us to be conscious of what we're casting out into the world and what we're going to create, and the other thing is to realize that all these voices are creating us at the same time.
Yeah.
So
well,
if
there
we're
is,
tuned
there
to a horror film, we might just have a bad night's sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the mind control happening in our world, and the massive propaganda and brainwashing. I mean, it's over the top, you know, combined with all the censorship. And, you know, so many of us aren't aware of it. So they will take on, they'll listen to the mainstream media, for example, and then they'll parrot what the mainstream media wants them to say without realizing, oh, isn't it interesting that you're holding the viewpoint that the corporations want you to hold? And all the while, they think they're actually in possession of the truth. and without realizing that they've been propagandized and that their mind is controlled. And, you know, and that's, I mean, of course, what I'm describing, that's one of the vectors of Watiko. And, of course, we then have to illumine that process, you know, as individuals in our own mind, you know, to the extent that we then, instead of being created by our thoughts, we actually can create with our thoughts. That's a radical difference because we have this incredible creative agency and power. All of us, you know, we've always had it 24/7. We carry it. But to the extent we don't know we have that creative power, Watiko, which has no creativity, it plugs into our own creative energy and turns it against us to feed its agenda, which is not serving us, but is actually killing us. But we're colluding with that to the extent we're turning a blind eye. So that's, in essence, what Watiko is about.
We're colluding with it also is that if people were honest with themselves, they're spending more time watching social media or media than picking up a paintbrush and tapping into their own inner voice, no matter how clouded it might be. I mean, it might be that one is sitting in front of that page and, you know, splashing odd colors and can't get a clear picture, but it's through that creativity that we're guided more to our truth, because you have to say that it is pretty complex in these times, in these Orwellian times, to figure out what is real news, what is fake news, what is, I mean, there's so many different many different channels. I mean, I don't know, Paul, how old you are, but when I was little, we had three channels. We had three channels, and now it's like there is so much information and telling you on all different layers, right? Of what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat, what you should think, what you shouldn't think.
But if I could just say what that brings up for me, you see, part of being creative and part of healing from the mind virus is to actually develop a relationship with your inner guidance, and that's related to your to the inner voice. We all have, you know, you can call it the higher self, the muse, the daimon, the genius. There are a million names for it. And the point is to differentiate between, you know, just our typical the neurotic mind, the monkey mind, you know, where when we get absorbed in that, all of our energy gets drained like a vampire, compared to when, you know, there's a different energetic signature when our higher self is talking. You know, it's how I write my books. I'm the author of the books, but I don't write them. I just get, you know, all of a sudden I hear this, I get a download from my higher self, and I've learned to pay attention. You know?
Let's take a small break, another very, very short break, and then we'll be back with more with Paul Levy and with Tico.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose. To link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Thank you. Welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm your host, Kara Johnstad, and with me in studio is Paul Levy, and we are talking about his new book, Wetiko, Healing the Mind Virus That Plagues Our World. And you touched on it a little bit, Paul, the word vocation coming from, the origin is actually coming from voice, listening to our inner voice. You were talking about listening to our higher self or the whisperings of our soul, and how if we are tuned in to that higher self, we can truly hear it calling to us. Do you think that that is the essence of what we are all hungry for? I sense that when people find their true calling or their purpose, that they can start relaxing a little bit more into who they are.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Like, I think about, you know, Jung himself, the way he described the real essence of the therapy that he was bringing forth, it had to do with connecting people with their inner guidance, you know? And when, you see, the thing is, people ask me, oh, you know, how to deal with Wetiko or, you know, whatever. The thing is, you see, when we have like a problematic situation, and like we were saying before, if we try to fight it, it makes it worse. If we try to deal with it, a lot of times that doesn't help. If we ignore it, then nothing happens. But like one of the ways of really healing it is finding something way more interesting that's creative, that all of a sudden you invest your attention in, that compels you to dream into it. And then all of a sudden you begin to realize, oh, that's drawing my attention. That's what I want to think about. Oh, I'm creatively expressing that vision. And then all of a sudden, you guaranteed will find out that the problematic aspect, the pathology, the Wetiko, whatever you would call it, that's just getting weaker and weaker because it feeds off of our attention. You see, it has no independent intrinsic existence. We're unwittingly colluding with it by focusing it on in a certain way. So this once again ties into the profound importance of being creative, and being creative is involving developing a relationship with our unconscious process and however that manifests, and learning to pay attention to that, and then having the courage to just whatever is activated in us to find the form that expresses it. It's what Christ was pointing out in the apocryphal text when he says, you know, that whole famous quote in, I think, the Gospel of Thomas, if you bring forth what's within you, it'll heal you. If you don't bring forth what's within you, it'll destroy you. Because the biggest poison in the human psyche is repressed and unexpressed creativity.
Boom. Drum roll, please. Exactly. Yeah. We are at this choice point in human revolution. When I think of Christ, I think of the line that there is no resurrection without a crucifixion.
Right.
The question is, I guess, are we going to continue killing ourselves, or are we going to shed light on what is inside us and killing us?
And, right. And that's the question,
right?
Because it's not just like we're asleep. It's as if there's some sort of like negative force that's invested in keeping us asleep. And one thought I just want to make sure not to forget, there's this philosopher, Nicholas Berdyaev, I think that's how you say his name. And he points out, you know, the unbelievable profundity of creativity, but he connects it to the second coming of Christ, because he basically says, oh, if we're just passively waiting, you know, for, you know, the second coming, for the Messiah to come, no, then it will never come. Then we'll just still be on the cross forever. But he goes, once we connect with our creative voice, because we're made in the image of the Creator, and the Creator is creative, we are creative beings. When we step up and into and fully participate in our own creative process, we're paving the way, we're invoking the coming of the Messiah, the coming of the second coming. And, you know, I have to say, just personally, when I found him saying that, it made me so happy because I could feel the truth of that. So any one of us connecting with our creative process could, you know, talk about the 100th monkey. That could be the very thing that catalyzes a shift in the entire collective consciousness.
It is also, I think, you're talking about the dream. I always had this dream, like, what would it be like if we just opened the windows every morning and said, I love you? You know, it's like, and everyone's like, Cara, it's like, that's a musical. It's not real life. But to ask ourselves these questions, like, what would happen if we danced down the street? Everyone's going to their fitness studios, but what would really happen if we started dancing instead of walking? What would happen if we...
Right.
If we simply took this creativity that we have, it's interesting that as children, we're so naturally bopping down the street and singing while moving sand in the sandbox. And, you know, and then suddenly we come into school systems or work systems or workplaces and everyone stops their whistling or their humming or their singing because it's considered not appropriate. Amazing how odd that is. It's almost like we're in our own little prison that we've created.
Yeah. No, totally. And you know, what that brings up in me is it's really interesting because quantum physics, you know, I mean, and that I want to point out that quantum physics, it really offers us the medicine for Watiko. And, you know, I've written a book about that. But the point is that if we get, you know, entrained and entranced in this limited way of thinking and thinking, oh, we're doomed and it's hopeless and, oh, there's no reason for me to do my inner work or dance in the streets or sing because what's the point? You know, we're just, you know, things look completely dark. That's like tragic because quantum physics is offering us that at each and every moment, you know, like a quantum entity, and we're all quantum entities, and this universe is quantum through and through, that at each and every moment, you know, there is an incredible array of potentialities that can manifest. And then we observe, you know, the moment in a certain way that's pointing at the incredible power of our observation and how we interpret reality and place meaning on it. But we then will observe reality in a particular way, and it will actualize in that particular way, and all the potentialities will vaporize as if they never existed. The point is that even if one of those potentialities is highly ridiculously unlikely, such as humanity waking up, that could be the reality that manifests this very moment. And if we're just caught in pessimism and despair and depression, thinking, no, that can't happen, then we're part of the problem. So that's why people who are plugged in, it's important for us to really stay connected with ourselves, with each other, and to embody that perspective that really anything is possible. When you plug in, whether you call it to quantum or to source or to God or to who we are, all bets are off. And when we understand this, it's so uplifting. It creates incredible positive energy because one of the dangers is for people, so many people are falling into and being caught by depression, despair, and pessimism. And then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. And once they get in, I was reading I think it's 1 in 5 in the moment. 1 in 5 Americans are on antidepressants, and a lot of them they can't get off because of the side effects are so horrific from these medications. And so we have ways to shift depression to expression. I mean, that is, or suppression to, you know, expression. You talk about how COVID-19 is a symbol of a much deeper infection. We've been talking about the Watiko virus, which I'm assuming is the overlaying huge essence of what gets rooted in our psyche, and that COVID-19 is just a smaller symbol of
virus. Yeah, and in the last section of my book, it's all about COVID, and I point out that the coronavirus, COVID, is really this lower level emanation of the real deadly virus, the higher dimensional Watiko, the mind virus. And what, so, you know, what I'm pointing out is that there is a way of seeing COVID and the whole phenomena of what's happening in our world with reference to it that can help us to see Watiko, the mind virus. Because if you remember, the whole thing about Watiko is that it can't stand to be seen. Right. Because then you take away its power and you empower yourself. And what I'm basically pointing out is that it's a huge mistake to see COVID as merely a physical virus. No. Right. Take a look at how it's affecting our world. It has a mental vector, an emotional. It's changing our behavior. It's changing our political system, our finances, what we think about, what we wear, how we interact. It's changing every aspect of our lives. The point is that COVID has an energetic body. It has an operational, subtle body, which is has multiple channels. And when you begin to see that, and they're all interrelated, and they all have to do with the psyche, because the psyche is the very source of how we change our laws or why we change them or whatever, or who's doing that and what where they're coming from. The point is that when you begin to see the energetic body of the coronavirus, you begin to see Watiko. And then when you begin to see Watiko, like I'm saying, you empower yourself, you unlock your creative spirit. And that's the salute. That's when the medicine starts happening.
Beautifully said. I mean, I think we do have a power. I was thinking that this whole pandemic, I love to flip words and sounds, and it's a little bit the spell casting. So we know that, you know, scared and sacred are flip sounds, and we know that evil and live is a flip sound. So I have been calling the COVID virus Sur Yves Divock the whole time. And I'm like, you do not need to knock on the door, Sir Yves Divock. It's all good. And amazingly and graciously, we are very, very healthy over here. So what would your last words be? What are the gifts, the highly beautifully creative, the creative imagination, but what are the gifts that not only this pandemic offers, but Watiko offers us at this turning point in time?
Well, the thing about Watiko, think about a shaman who goes on the shamanic journey. Well, how come they're going on the shamanic journey? Because there was some sort of trauma or abuse or wounding that split them off and they became disassociated. So that compels them to go on a journey to find their split off part so they could remember, put themselves back together to remember who they are. So the point is, you see, if Watiko didn't exist, we'd have to invent it. It's so incredibly important. It's the biggest catalyst for the evolution of our species. And so the idea being, I mean, on the one hand, it's making it easier to recognize the dreamlike nature. Think about it, because things are so surreal, you know, since the whole lockdown happened. So the point is that because it's you know, so challenging, and it's like traumatizing and touching all of our stuff and giving us the sense that there's no postponing coming to terms with our shadow, it's actually forcing us to go in search and to connect with who we actually are. And when we actually connect with who we can realize, oh my God, who gets the thanks for that? It's Watiko. If Watiko didn't arrive, I would have just been kind of sitting in front of my TV watching Netflix or something like that. So, you know, it's the idea that that Watiko is a quantum phenomena. There's a superposition of states. It's the deepest evil or it's the greatest medicine, depending on how we dream it. And that's on us. We can't blame anybody else for you know, we're the ones who are interpreting our experience, placing meaning our experience. And just very simply put, to just really conclude, that Watiko is this revelation. It's a living revelation. It's teaching us everything we need to know. But if we don't recognize, it's the same thing when you have a dream. A dream is sending us messages, symbolic messages. If we don't get the message, what happens? We have a recurring dream again and again, and it amplifies and amplifies. That's what's happening when you see this, our world, as a dreaming process. There's a message that we're being given, and it's coming through the darkness, through the Watiko epidemic. And if we don't recognize it, we're fated to continue to destroy ourselves. But if enough of us recognize what's being revealed, we can dream ourselves awake. And that's evolutionary. That's to realize we can participate in our own evolution, and we can conspire to co-inspire each other. It's a real conspiracy theory, in a way that helps all of us to wake up.
We can conspire to inspire each other. That is brilliant. Paul, thank you so much for being with me here at Voice Rising, for sharing with everybody, for everybody out there, the Watiko Healing the Mind virus that plagues our world. I believe it's coming out either today, tomorrow, or the next day.
Yeah, it's coming out tomorrow.
So we are at the brink. Get your orders in. And we are at that turning point. And I think for all of us, I mean, I include myself, to have gratitude for this moment in time and to really see that we are the change that, as Gandhi said, right, be the change you wish to see in the world, that we are that change, and that it can be as easy as tapping into our creative genius and allowing our authentic voice and our movements and our thoughts and our expression to touch the world and touch each other, that is the key. So thank you again, and I wish you all the best for this new book.
Yeah, I just so appreciate it. Really, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.